This week we have Parashat Emor. In Emor we have one of the three places that has long discussions on the various holidays. And if you have nothing to do, then you can open up Parashat Emor and compare it with Parashat Pinchas, right? And compare it with Parashat Re'eh and take a look then in the three discussions which one is focused upon. But today we're going to actually not only what's focused on, what's included and what's not included, what the sequence is, what the discussion is about, the focal point. As I said, that's something which is worthwhile to do, but we're not doing that. What we're going to do is to focus on one particular element, one which has actually drawn a great deal of attention, and it's something which is relevant because right now we're in the midst of it. In source number one, Perakaf Gimel, Pasuk Tet, by Deber Hashem Moshe Lemar, and God spoke to Moshe saying, Daberu b'nei Yisrael, speak to the children of Israel, v'omar t'leim, and say to them, ki tavo al ha'aretz, when you come to the land, asher ani noten lachem, which I'm going to give you, k'tzartim et k'tzira, then you're going to do, what's k'tzira mean?
Harvesting.
Et omer reshet k'tzirchem el ha'kohen. V'aveitim et omer reshet k'tzirchem el ha'kohen. You're going to bring the first of the k'tzira, the harvesting, to the kohen. The omer itself is out of the first crop, which is the barley. V'nif et ha'omer lefnei Hashem l'tzonchem b'machrat ha'shabbat yinifenu ha'kohen. And it's brewed, it's going to be raised by the kohen a little later on. It tells us that not only do we bring this b'machrat ha'shabbat, but usfartem lachem b'machrat ha'shabbat, you're going to count from the day after the Shabbat, whatever the Shabbat means. I will try. You're going to count for 7 complete weeks, ad mimorchad haShabbat haShviit, until the end of the 7th day after this Shabbat. Tisperu chamishim yom, you count 50 days, ukraftem mincha chadasha laHashem, and then you're going to bring a new offering. And so basically we have over here two agricultural points. One agricultural point is the bringing of the omer, which is the first harvest. Afterwards, we're going to have the bikurim, which will be the first fruits, which are going to be brought by that next holiday, which we know as holiday called Shivuot. And of course, why is it called Shivuot? Because that means weeks. It's the holiday of weeks after the 7 weeks. We're going to count the 7 weeks. The Ramban very correctly points out something which should be obvious to us, but this is a point which has a great deal of confusion. Source number two, the Ramban says, focusing on Pasuk Yud, it says, Ki tavo el ha'aretz, when you get to the land. Now, why would this be focused upon the land? Right, it's two agricultural points. So obviously, this is when you're going to get to the land. And he says, V'achar ken amar ki kasher nevo el ha'aretz navi, mimachrat haShabbat hazot, and iskeret omer tnufa, v'hi haShabbat rishona iskeret kan, v'li made shelo yinaheg haomer bamidbar, uvachutz la'aretz. The law of the omer only applies in the land of Israel, right? It doesn't apply, obviously, in the desert. It doesn't apply in chutz la'aretz. How do I know that? Because it says, ki tavo el ha'aretz. So therefore, if I were to ask you multiple questions, one question would be, so, do you think they counted the 49 or 50 days, you think they counted it in the desert? What's the point of counting? The point of counting is between these two agricultural... Now, on the other hand, you have heard many, many times about the counting to get to Har Sinai from leaving Egypt and so on and so forth, and that seems very much like a fantasy. Because, as I said, the verses very clearly over here are saying this. The other point is, why in the world would people in Chutz La'aretz do the counting? For that matter, why would they count with the bracha? It says when you come to the land. By the way, the additional question would be, why would we count today if we don't have these two demarcations? Right? We don't have either of the agricultural laws applying, either by the Omer or by the Chag of Bikurim, so then why would there be any counting? Because so one would have to say, somehow say that either on a rabbinic or on a Torah level, somehow the counting is independent. Most of the authorities today say that the counting is rabbinic. That's what most of them say. What's problematic is in all the shuls, before they count, they say, Hini muchan mazuna kai mitzatase. So I don't know how they say, I'm about to do something which is a Torah law, when according to almost everybody, it's not a Torah law. It says Kemosha Katuv B'Torah, as it says in the Torah. So Rav Moshe Feinstein, he felt almost like he said, okay, Kemosha Katuv B'Torah, we're doing it like it says in the Torah, but not really like it says in the Torah. So I'm saying it's not a very simple point. On the other hand, if you look at source number three, we have a Reb Chaim Palti.
That has to do with the Beit HaMikdash. It doesn't have to do with the land.
It's a combination. It's a combination. It's a combination of the land. It's an agricultural holiday, which is the land, which was celebrated in the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash. I mean, even before they built the Beit HaMikdash, they still had a Mishkan in the land of Israel. Rav Chaim Paltiel writes in source 3, Usfartim lachem, mashal, shehotziat ohavo mi beit hasohar. This is a mashal, like somebody who took his lover out of a prison. Right, he broke her out. Damsel in distress. Was broken out of prison. The kavalo zman litein matana gdola. And they set a date that he was going to give her an incredible present. V'yato ohev moneh kol sha'am atayagi oto azman. And therefore the lover counted every single day until the appointed time it came. That you like, because that's romantic and that's beautiful, and the lover and the damsel in distress. Right, right. So that is a good question, that if that's the case, then you should be counting down and you should be counting up, which is not a simple question. We should be counting down.
It's a bad time
in terms of much more recent events. If you want to start with the death of Rabbi Akiva's students that continued to the Crusades and the pogroms and the blood libels, all that was a bad time. Presumably in the land of Israel during the time of the Beit HaMikdash, there's no evidence that it was a bad time whatsoever, quite the opposite. It was a very happy time. Okay? And when people get upset with the celebration of Yom HaTzma'ud and, for that matter, Lag BaOmer and Pesach Sheni and Yom Yerushalayim and all these things in the middle of the Omer, so all that it is returning days which were originally happy days back to their original personality rather than the later personality that was adopted.
That is beautiful.
Well, finally. How many years has it been? Okay. So... Okay, so first let me just touch this Machrat HaShabbat issue. And what's in the back of our minds, if it's not clear in the back of our minds, or only the back of my mind, which should be the back of our minds, is, so hold it a second, what is this? Is this counting, as we see, you know, implied from the verses and the Ramban points out, between two agricultural points, or is it really somehow connected to our damsel in distress, of course, the Jewish people who were rescued and taken out? I mean, which one of these is really accurate? The other problematic thing within the verse, which, by the way, I think is actually related to the whole issue, is the description of Mimachrat HaShabbat. A number of commentaries have already pointed out how much easier this would have been in Jewish history if it would have written Mimachrat Ha... Okay, so that, by the way, that exactly may be the problem. But instead of calling it Shabbat, now I on some other occasion have showed you in this very section how many times the word Shabbat is used where it does not refer to the Sabbath day, the seventh day. Yom Kippur is called the Shabbat Shabbaton multiple times. Other days are called Shabbaton. Shabbat means day of rest. Shabbat means Isur Melacha. Shabbat does not necessarily mean the seventh day. And it's very, very clear from this context. So anybody who will insist that because it says Mimachrat HaShabbat, it must definitely mean the day after, the Sunday, as it were, I just don't think that's true in terms of pshat. It's not, again, how do we define pshat? Pshat is the straightforward understanding based upon larger context. That's what I think pshat means. Pshat does not mean taking a word out of context. It means basing it within the larger context. The larger context in this chapter, in the previous chapter, is that Shabbat does not necessarily mean the seventh day. So therefore, as much as in this case, the Gemara calls them the Baitusim, you'll find later people, a lot of confusion between the Siddukim and Baitusim, but this was actually the Baitusim who argued. By the way, the Gemara is beautiful. The Gemara says that the Baitusim had a debate with the rabbis, and Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai gave them a hard time, and nobody can answer. Finally, there was one elderly Baitusi, I guess elder implies a scholar, who says, Galui v'yadua, it's very well known, Moshe loved the Jews. So if Moshe loved the Jews, he made it Mimachor HaShabbat so that we would have Chag Shavuot, would always be a two-day holiday and have a long weekend. That was the that was his ultimate argument why this was such a good idea. And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai says, if Moshe loved the Jewish people, then why exactly did he keep us in the desert for 40 years? By the way, the underlying implication of all this is that this is Moshe's idea, not God's idea, which itself I think is very interesting, because one always would have thought that the Baitusim or the Tzedukim believed in the written Torah, not the oral Torah. And this may be an indication that even regarding the written Torah, there are some challenges. I also think that the underlying issue that some of the later commentaries, later means in terms of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, but early in terms of us, is including the Ibn Ezra, is that part of what they were concerned about were the Karaites. I have, again, I didn't check this up, it just occurred to me, I have reason to suspect that the Karaites as well understood it was Mechor HaShabbat meant on Sunday, which again would be a very literal reading and not a non-contextual literal reading, which again, I'm a little disappointed in if I'm correcting the suspicion, but I think I am. Mimachrad HaShabbat, the word Mimachrad is used a number of times in the Torah. If you look at source number 4 or 5, it refers to the bringing of the korban after it's brought. The Ibn Edu Nadavah Zevach Korbanot B'yom HaKrivo Zevcho Yechel U'Mimachrad, which means you can eat it and the next day afterwards. Again, in source number 5, which is Perek Yotet, V'chikiz b'tu zevach shlamim la'ashem l'rtzachon tizbachu b'yom zivchechem yeyochel u'mimachrat, which means it connects it to how long you can eat the korban the next day. But over here, we have a little bit of complication. And this is something which sometimes we forget and sometimes we get confused about. On a biblical level, and I'm not talking on our level, I'm not talking even on the Mishnah's level necessarily. As the Gemara says a number of times, that the language of the rabbis on the one hand, the language on the Torah on the other hand. Right? The scripture uses one kind of language sometimes, and the rabbis use a different kind of language. We refer to the seven-day holiday as Chag HaPesach. The Torah doesn't. Actually, the Torah never calls the seven-day holiday Chag HaPesach, which should be very, very clear in source number 6, and then you'll see how important source number 7 is. Source number 6 is in Vayikra, Perek Kaf Gimel, which is actually right where we're up to. This is the same chapter we're dealing with. It's right before. This is the verses right before we get up to the Omer, which is counting. Ela modei Hashem mikrei kodesh shetikro otam b'mo adam. Here are the holidays. This is the beginning of the discussion, which means in Parshat Emor, where do we start our holidays? We're starting over here, the holidays at least, with Pesach, which should not be surprising because it's Chodesh Rishon. B'Chodesh Rishon b'Aba Asar l'Chodesh b'in harabayim Pesach l'Hashem. This is the holiday of Pesach. When is Pesach? First month, 14th day of the month. B'in harabayim means in the late afternoon. Right? Next pasuk. U'v'chamisha asar yom l'Chodesh zeh chag ha-matzot l'Hashem shivat yamim matzot te'ochelu. Which means there's two different holidays mentioned right over here. One is Chag HaMatzot and one is Chag HaPesach. Chag HaPesach is on the 14th in the afternoon. Chag HaMatzot is on the 15th. So when it says Mimachrat HaShabbat, which is it referring to?
The 14th day.
No. How do I know it's not the 14th day? Because the 14th is not a Shabbat. When you bring the Korban Pesach, is there an Isur Melacha? No. When is there an Isur Melacha? Only on the 15th day. So Mimachrat, again, over here, you see how ripe this is for confusion regarding which holiday are you talking about? When do you do it? So the Torah over here stresses Mimachrat HaShabbat, not the next day from when the Korban Pesach was brought, which could have easily been understood in terms of the other times of Mimachrat, which is normally Mimachrat HaZevach, the day after the Zevach is. Over here, it's not after the Zevach is brought. So over here, Mimachrat HaShabbat is in contrast to the normal Mimachrat HaZevach. And over here, Mimachrat HaShabbat is therefore, it's not going to be the day after the 14th, which is the 15th. It's going to be the day after the Shabbat, which was the Isur Melacha, which is the 15th, which means that this will be done on the 16th. So by the way, I think it's actually Mimachrat HaShabbat. Again, I'm just saying, look at things contextually. It actually becomes very, very clear what it means. It's only when you want a long weekend or refuse to look at something contextually, then suddenly you get a great deal of confusion. By the way, isn't that scary? I just not convinced you of this. And I think I'm right about this. I didn't see anybody saying what I'm pointing out now, but I think that this is actually the pshat. Now you'll realize when you look at source number 7, again, where there would have been room for confusion. Elamase b'nei Yisrael. So now you know the context. Bamidbar, when it gives you the list of the various travelings that the Jewish people took. Pasuk bet v'yichtov Moshe et motzam, right where they went to. Pasuk gimel v'yisumi Ramses. They traveled from Ramses. B'chodesh harishon b'chamisha asar yom l'chodesh harishon mimochrat haPesach. Right. 1 second. Pesach is the 14th. So what's mimachrat haPesach? The 15th. And by the way, it says it very clearly. V'yisumi Ramses. When do they actually leave? B'chodesh harishon, on the first month, b'chamishasar yom, what do we normally call that day? Chag HaMatzot. Why do we celebrate Chag HaMatzot? Because that's the day that we left. That's the day that we left. Again, v'yisumi Ramses b'chodesh harishon b'chamishasar yom l'chodesh harishon mimachrat haPesach yotzu b'nei Yisrael b'yad ramah l'nei kol Mitzrayim. So over here, you see mimachrat haPesach, and now you realize how confusing. If it would have said mimachrat haPesach, you would have had confusion. So over here, in order to avoid all confusion, mimachrat haShabbat, mimachrat haShabbat. Therefore, you've avoided the confusion of Pesach and Chag HaMatzot, which again, I'm telling you, is pretty clear in the Torah. If you would have said mimachrat Chag HaMatzot, what would your problem would have been? Then are you talking about after the first day or after the seventh day? So mimachrat Chag HaMatzot would have been confusing. What's the easiest way of talking about the 16th day of the month? Mechorat HaShabbat. That's the easiest way of saying it, which is why the Torah actually says it. But as you see, it caused a great deal of confusion anyway. So again, what you should at least note over here is Mechorat HaPesach. There is another verse in Sefer Yehoshua. Don't ask me about it because that's confusing. You were going to ask me about it, but you were going to ask me about Sefer Yehoshua now. I knew that, yeah. Right. This is the second part. The second part, which is irrelevant for today, which is where your confusion lies, and that is that we know when Chag HaPesach begins. The question is when Chag HaPesach ends. How long is this Chag HaPesach? Which means Chag HaPesach is Bein HaArbayim. So it's the time when you bring the Korban Pesach. That's the time that you're no longer allowed to eat chametz. So that would be in the afternoon of the 14th day. So now So now Chag HaMatzot begins at nightfall, right, of the 15th, the eve of the 15th. Now the question is, when did Chag HaPesach end? So it's possible that Chag HaPesach ends at the point you can no longer eat the Korban Pesach. So therefore, it could be according to Rav Elazar ben Azariah, roughly 12 hours until Chatzot, or it could be according to the Chachamim, Rabbi Akiva and others, that it's until daybreak. Therefore, you can bring the Korban Pesach until the break of day. So therefore, so you would have an overlap between the two. The one thing that I'll remind you of, which you know gets a little confusing, in Judaism, what comes first, day or night? Night comes first, and then the day, except for one place, and that's the Beit HaMikdash. The Beit HaMikdash, the day starts in the morning and not at night. The night follows the day in the Beit HaMikdash instead of the other way around. In terms of the korban is brought in the day, you can eat it at night, right? Which means the etiquette for the Beit HaMikdash is the way that the day begins is in the morning and not at the night. I would say necessarily, but I don't. Yeah, but that's still part of the new day. That's preparation. The Trumat HaDeshen is preparation for the day. The day begins. It begins in the day. It begins with the start of the day. The night follows the day in terms of all etiquette for the Beit HaMikdash, and not the other way around, like we have in quote unquote in normal perspective. There's a very disturbing Rashbam, Vayi Erev, Vayi Voker. So what was first, Erev or Voker? What was first in creation? Was it first, was it evening first? Was it morning first? So the Rashbam says, Vayihi Erev, it became evening. So that means it was day first. So subsequently, if you look, this may or may not be related, but if you look in your Mikrot Gedolot, you will find that there is no Rashbam on the first, I think it's around three chapters of Bereshit. It's just not there. You could buy a separate Rashbam on the Chumash, and you can find it there. So one of the reasons I heard is because people found that very, very disturbing, that he would say, he goes, no, that's Pshat. The Rashbam always wants to give a Pshat. But what if the original days of creation, the Garden of Eden, where according to the Rashbam, the day comes first and then the night, what if it's following the Beit HaMikdash's etiquette, and therefore Garden of Eden has the same level of Beit HaMikdash, then it's not such a strange idea as much as you would think. Anyway, that goes back to our Pesach thing. Pesach is a Beit HaMikdash-oriented holiday where the Korban Pesach was brought. So it's brought during the day and it's eaten at night. So that should be no surprise, because in terms of the Beit HaMikdash law, the day comes first and then the night. Regarding the seven-day holiday, so that's like all our other holidays, so therefore first it begins the night and then it continues into the day. Shabbat is not a Beit HaMikdash-oriented holiday. So anyway, I'm just going to say is that the overlap over here between Pesach, Chag HaPesach and Chag HaMatzot may actually have to do with the differential between Beit HaMikdash-oriented laws versus other places. And okay, so just something to think about. But for us, I'm not going to say that the Shabbat started differently. I'm saying that the etiquette of the Beit HaMikdash is that the night follows the day and not the other way around. And that's regarding the eating of the korbanot. So, if you want, I'll say it again, and if you want, I'll say it again afterwards. I'm saying that's the way the Beit HaMikdash works. If this is very foreign to you, okay, so now you realize how sad it is that we are very foreign from the existence of the Beit HaMikdash. The Ibn Ezra... Only reason I brought you this Ibn Ezra is because you get to hear a secret again from him. This secret's not as good as last week's secret. Mimachrat Shabbat, Amru Chazal, the rabbis say, Mimachrat Yom Tov, source 8. They say it's the day after Yom Tov. Right? That's what Shabbat means, the day of rest. The Hamachishim Amru, the deniers say. So again, it's hard for me to believe that he's dealing with the deniers and he's calling them deniers if it's only because of the Baitusim who existed so long ago. It seems to me that it must be the, as I said, the Karaites as well. Shehu kimashmo, it's as it says, it's straightforward reading. Vaminim hivirayo mishnat hashemitabayo v'tzomagadol v'yom tura shekotuvo shabbaton. I mean, as I told you, the word shabbaton is used in many other contexts, not just in the context of the seventh day. Shabbaton always means a day of rest, which should be fine. Towards the very end, there's around three lines from the end, three and a half lines from the end, he writes, V'nei ermoz lecha sod echad, I'm going to hint to you a secret, shekol ha-mo'adim tluyim biyom yadua me'achodesh. All of our holidays are connected to a particular day of the month. Right? All the other holidays are said, this is the day of the month. V'lo ne'ermar b'chag ha-shavuot, but regarding Shavuot, it doesn't have a particular day, a mispar. Bavur ha-sfira shehi mitzvah, because of the sfira, which is the mitzvah. V'chazal he'etiku ki b'chag ha-shavuot haya matan Torah. And the rabbis tell us that on Shavuot was when matan Torah took place. Now, let me just pause a second before I read the very end. At no place in the Torah does it tell us when matan Torah was. Matan Torah, the date of Matan Torah is never given. And I could also say, just like the place of Matan Torah is of no significance the next day, I can say the date or the time of Matan Torah is not significant. And then I can give you a whole philosophical explanation of this, that the giving of the Torah is transcendent, and Torah doesn't only apply to one particular time and one particular place, and every day we should see it as if the Torah was given, which means ultimately I could put forth the argument to say that there is no date of Matan Torah because the Torah doesn't give one. On the other hand, the rabbis say, no, there is a date, and that is Chag HaShavuot. Now, Chag HaShavuot, in terms of its basic understanding, is exclusively an agricultural holiday. The rabbis are telling us that there's also a historical / theological importance to the date, which is completely different, which means the Bikurim are agricultural land of Israel oriented. On the other, and the counting, as we saw, was land of Israel oriented. Matan Torah is desert, right? Completely independent of this. Now the question really is, you know, is there a link between Matan Torah and Chag HaMatzot or Chag HaPesach? Is there really a link there, or is that purely our imagination? We'll see very clearly what the answer is to that. Or is the only real link that exists between Shivuot, which is Chag HaBikurim, and the Havat HaOmer? And any connection between Shivuot and Matan Torah, and therefore Pesach, is purely our imagination. So it's basically the question that I'm bringing up, that I want to grapple. Is there a real connection between Chag HaShivuot and Pesach, Chag HaShivuot and Chag HaMatzot, Chag HaShivuot and Matan Torah and Pesach, or is this all our imagination? And if one was reading strictly the Pshat of the Chumash, would we come to the conclusion that the reality of Shavuot is just purely agricultural, purely connected to the Omer, and the Omer is only connection to the land of Israel, and nothing else is really there? And now let's read the last couple of words of the Ibn Ezra. He says, V'alav ne'amar, regarding Chag HaShivuot, it says, Ki Chag Hashem Lanu, for this is going to be a holiday for us. Now, that verse that he refers to at the very end, where is that verse from? That comes in Parshat Bo, Perek Yud, Posuk Tet, which we can look at very conveniently in source number 9. This is when Moshe is negotiating with Paro, which again we've seen endless negotiations. Vayomer Moshe says, B'na'arenu uvizkunenu nelech, b'vanenu uvinotenu, b'tzonenu uvikarenu nelech, kichag Hashem lanu. We're all going, by the way, later on, we're going to have something which is called Hakel, which I showed you a number of times, that Hakel is connected to Matan Torah. Matan Torah is everyone's there, men, women, and children. Hakel later on, men, women, and children will be invited to come to the Hakel. Over here, Moshe already makes that reference. All of us are going. Men, women, and children, everybody's going to be a part of this, but the last four words are what are interesting to us. Why? Ki chag l'ashem lanu. Take a look at Rabbeinu Bachaye commenting on that verse in source number 10. Ki chag l'ashem lanu. Ze Chag HaShivuot, Hu Yom Matan Torah. So there is this unnamed holiday mentioned in the discussions between Moshe and Paro. And by the way, the more you think about it, you realize, hold it, this holiday was mentioned lots of times, that we need to have a holiday out in the desert. So he says, no, what is this holiday? It's Matan Torah. That's exactly what this holiday is, which means the objective all along of leaving Egypt. Again, you'll say the objective of leaving Egypt was to get to the land of Israel. By the way, that's never the stated objective in terms of the negotiations with Paro. In terms of the negotiations with Paro, all the time we say, no, there's a holiday that we're going to have. Yeah. We'll get there in a second. Zechag HaShivuot, Hu Yom Matan Torah, Shekvar Amar Lo, which God already made reference to it, and now he's going back to Paragimel. Paragimel, if you don't recognize it, is always back, all the way back by the Sneba, the burning bush. Right? This is the very beginning discussion. Let's continue, Rabbeinu Mechai. Botzicha et ha'am mimitzrayim tavdun et elokim ala har hazeh. Ve'ein lefaresh chag Pesach. He goes, it's not referring to the holiday which is called Pesach. Shrei b'mitzrayim asu et ha'Pesach. Right? The first holiday of Passover was known in Egypt. Gami yefsher lefaresh Sukkot. It's not talking about the holiday of Sukkot. Shere'in lo zikaron b'har elokim. It has nothing to do with standing in front of the mountain of God. Avol hu chag ha'shavuot shebechodesh Sivan hu shekatuv bechodesh ha'shlishli etzei b'nei Yisrael mi'eretz Mitzrayim b'yom hazeh bo midbar Sinai b'yom zeh rosh chodesh Sivan hayav v'neshtahu sham hei yamim ulamachrato b'yom shishi netnat Torah. I mean, basically, Rabbeinu Bachaye is doing something which should be obvious to all of us. Without having any idea when Matan Torah is, we actually have a fairly good idea. Because it says in the third month, we got to Har Sinai. You want to count your 50 days after leaving Egypt, you're going to get more or less to this date. So what he's saying it a little stronger than I'm saying. He's saying you're basically talking about ballpark the same day, within 1 or 2 days, one way or the other. By the way, the big question is going to be, in terms of what date is going to be, how many days was there in the month of Nisan that year? How many days was the month of Iyar that year? And you realize you have flexibility of a couple of 2 or 3 days in terms of when Shavuot can come out. A matter of fact, the rabbis tell us in the Gemara, in the Tosefta, it says that Shavuot can come out, if I'm not mistaken, on the 5th of the month, on the 6th of the month, on the 7th of the month. There is a lot of leeway because 50 days from the 14th or the 50 days from the Omer, beginning of the Omer, can take you to any one of a couple of different days within the month of Sivan. And again, let's keep in mind that it never said that this holiday is on X day of Sivan, as Ibn Ezra pointed out. Rather, it says it's X amount of days afterwards. The verse he is referring to is in Source 11, Vayomer ki ye'imach v'zelecha ha'ot. By the way, this is the first sign. This is the one that plays tricks in our heads, right? Whenever I would ask, what's the first sign that God gave Moshe by the snare? People are saying he turned this staff into a serpent or his hand. No, the first sign that he gives is, here's the sign. V'zelecha ha'ot kenochi shlachticha. You're going to serve God on this mountain. By the way, which mountain was Moshe standing on when the snare appeared? It was Har Chorev. What's Har Chorev? Har Chorev later becomes Sinai. In fact, there's a midrash that says the name Sinai comes from the word the sneh. The sneh means the burning bush. The mountain later on is going to be burning, and that's when the Torah is going to be given, which means Har Sinai is the sneh. Har Sinai is Har Chorev, which means you're going to come, you're going to serve God on this mountain. And let me now ask you a question. What does the word serve mean? Avod, avodah. So what kind of avodah is going to take place over here? So it could be korbanot, which, by the way, are part of the receiving of the Torah. The word korbanot brought within that day. The Targum Yonatan on that pasuk, when he says, ta'avdu net elokim al harazeh, what's that? Look at the end of source 12. What does it mean to have dunat Hashem bahar hazeh? You're going to receive the Torah in this place, which means by the very beginning, by the sneh, God says you're going to serve me on this mountain. The objective of leaving Egypt was a chag. Again, one of the objectives was to have a chag. The chag that they're going to have is going to be on this mountain. What is the content of that chag? The content of the chag is going to be to receive the Torah. By the way, as far as how many days, 49 days, 50 days, or 3 days, as far as how many days that, I don't know. But I do know one thing, that the holiday we're talking about over here is the holiday of receiving the Torah. The Ibn Ezra, in Source 13, back on that pasuk by the sneh, you're going to serve God on this mountain. V'tam zelecha ha'ot, and how is this a sign? Lamal shachticha lotzia ta'am. Why am I sending you to take out the people? She'avdu to al harazeh, in order to serve me on this mountain. V'chein ha'katuv motziat chemir etzterem liot lochem lelokim, that I took you out in order that I will be for your guide. V'chein ha'mamosh leparo derech shloshet yamim nelech ba'midbar. Now we're up to your 3 days. This is going to go for 3 days. Ki mitzrayim ar had Sinai shlosha yamim. The distance is only 3 days when we left. Did we go in the shortest possible path or no? Which means it is a distance of 3 days. Don't count from the capital, but because from the whole area of Mitzrayim. Don't ask, but they traveled 3 days from the Yam and they didn't get to Sinai. They didn't go the closest way. Kasher katuv. They did not walk in the way that they could have walked, so therefore it was a distance of 3 days, but it obviously took them far more than 3 days. Now, everything I've been trying to say till now... One second. So everything I've been trying to say till now, again, let's just catch up to where we are. The basic idea of the counting between the Omer and the Bikurim sounds to be an exclusively agricultural Land of Israel Beit HaMikdash holiday, having nothing to do with the background of Pesach standing over there. The Mimochrat HaShabbat, which easily could have been understood as the day after Shabbat, which therefore, by the way, when do you start? Which Shabbat do you start? Becomes also very confusing. Eze Shabbat, which means just saying it's Merachat Shabbat is a very good thing to say, except for the problem. Okay, which Shabbat are you talking about? Is it any Shabbat in the month of Nisan? Who set him up to Nisan even? It says Merachat Shabbat. It's just totally floating over there. Do I count any? Where do I start? Where do I end up? There's no demarcation, which again is a problem in Merachat Shabbat. But by definition, Merachat Shabbat, as I see the word Shabbat or Shabbaton being used consistently within this and other sections, the word Shabbat means the day of rest, a day where there is cessation of work, a day of Yisur Melacha. Chag HaPesach is not an Yisur Melacha. Chag HaMatzot is an Yisur Melacha. So by saying Machrat HaShabbat, it's the next day after the first day of the Chag HaMatzot. Now that necessarily does link this 50-day counting, not just with some agricultural event which is going to take place then. It also seems to link it with leaving Egypt and the whole process of leaving Egypt. Now, on the other hand, what did I point out? That leaving Egypt includes the celebration of some anonymous holiday. This anonymous holiday, as we're being told by the commentary, what anonymous holiday? No, you're going to serve me on this mountain. Now, once I start putting the pieces together, we're going from the very beginning, God said, you're going to serve me on this mountain. Which mountain? That you can't make a mistake. That's Har Chorev. That's Har Sinai. So you're going to serve me on this mountain. I have to now scratch my head and say, wow, I wonder what service took place on this mountain. No, that becomes very clear that not only in terms of this general approximate counting, I've ended up at Matan Torah, in terms of my description of the objective of leaving Egypt from the very, very beginning, the place was supposed to be this same mountain, which means I've arrived at it in terms of this approximate chronology, but I've arrived at the date also in terms of very specific location. And now, once you realize that, you realize why they're all saying, no, that's Matan Torah. Of course it's Matan Torah. And what we've been asking for all along has been Matan Torah. So now we realize something, that the same way that there's a link between these agricultural events, there's also a link between leaving Egypt till we get to Har Sinai. To the extent that the Ramban in source number 14 writes, V'tziva b'chag ha-matzot shiv'a yamim b'ktusha lefnei melachareyem, ki kolom kedoshim, u'v'tochem Hashem, u'manam mimena, and you count from this, tish'a v'arba'im yom, shiv'a shivu'ot, ki mei olam. You count 7 weeks, 49 days. V'kadosh yom shmini ke-shmini shel chag. The eighth day, the eighth is holy like the eighth day of Chag. Now, he's making a very interesting connection here. What he's really trying to tell you is if you look at Sukkot, Sukkot is a seven-day holiday. What's the eighth day of Sukkot? Shmini Atzeret. Shmini Atzeret is you have the seven, then you have the eight. At the end of seven, you have eight. So he's saying over here that the seven of Pesach, and I'm deliberately not using the word days right now, the seven of Pesach is counted in a dual fashion. There are 7 days of Pesach, but there's also 7 weeks of Pesach. Let's read the line again.
7 weeks of Pesach?
Don't worry, you can eat chametz. Umima min umana mimenu tish'ar ba'arbim yom, shiva shivuot kimei olam. These are 7 weeks like 7 days. V'kadosh yom shmini, the eighth day, which is the after 7 weeks, Kishmini Shochag. It has the same holiness like the eighth day. By the way, they're both called Atzeret, right? Chag Shavuot is also called Atzeret, and that's called Shmini Atzeret. The Ramban is telling you, Vayamim hasfurim bein tayim kicholo shomoed bein harishon vashmini b'chag. He's telling us that the 7 weeks of the Omer are not sad days. He's telling us the 7 weeks of the Omer have a philosophical, not a halacha, a philosophical understanding of Chol HaMoed. What is Chol HaMoed? Chol HaMoed is a time which is a hybrid. It's both Chol and it's Moed. You can't call it a holiday because you're allowed to do work, but you can't call it a completely secular day because it's a Moed. And the Moed means closeness to God. He's saying these 7 weeks of Chol HaMoed, instead of... I said you don't have to eat matzah. You don't even have to eat matzah on Pesach Sheni. I don't know who made that up. There's no matzah on Pesach Sheni even. It's a little funny because Pesach Sheni is the day that the Korban was brought. If you want to eat matzah Pesach Sheni, it should be on the next day, not on that day. So whatever. You don't have to eat matzah then. But the Ramban over here is very powerful. Because the Ramban is telling us, these whole 7 weeks, and that's what's funny, because in our consciousness, the Omer is a sad time. You see, all these bad things happen. Guess what? The Ramban doesn't know that. The Ramban thinks that these are 7 weeks of celebration, these 7 weeks of holiday, 7 weeks of holiday without an Isur Melacha, but they culminate in the eighth. The eighth is the Atzeret, is Yom HaChamishim, is Chag HaShavuot. Which means, as far as the Ramban is concerned, of course there's a connection between Pesach and Shavuot, and not only is there, if there's a connection between, then what are the days in between called? They're called Chol HaMoed. So the Ramban over here is very convinced of the holiness of the entire time of the Omer, which I think, yeah. It's a different dynamic. It's not exactly.
It's not the same.
No. It's a different dynamic.
And what does this explain why it's only one day?
Yes.
The other holidays.
Correct. That's part of exactly the issue. Why should Shavuot be only one day? He says, no, it's not one day. It's the eighth day of Pesach. It's the eighth day of Pesach, the same way that Shemini Atzeret is the eighth day of Sukkot. Exactly. Very good. Getting back to our problem of counting. The Ran, which is a commentary on the Rif, halachic source, in 15, he says something which is of course true. He says, V'rov mefarshim maskimim desfira to omer achshav deleka vav alo korban eina elamid rabbanan ve'alma zeichel l'mikdash k'damar meimar hatam zeichel l'mikdash ba'almahu. He says, according to almost all the commentaries, that the counting Bizman Hazeh is no longer a Torah law. Why would he say this? Because it says, when do you count? From the time that you bring the Omer. We don't bring the Omer anymore. Again, so much. We not only do not bring the Omer, if you ask the average religious Jew, what's the Omer? They'll say, oh, the Omer is the time that we do counting, and it's a sad time. That's right. What's the reality? What the Omer is a korban, and it was a happy time, which means people have the exact opposite understanding what the Omer really is. So he says that why do we count today? So he says it's rabbinic zecher lemikdash. There are a number of things that we do zecher lemikdash. It's interesting. There's some things we do zecher lekorban, and some things we do zecher lemikdash. There's certain things which are done to remember that there was a korban. The Mikdash was destroyed, and there are certain laws that were instituted, Zeichel LeMikdash, to remember that there once was a Mikdash. So some are sad and some are happy. Zeichel LeMikdash would actually be something which is happy, that we want to do something the same way to remember that there was once a Beit HaMikdash, which means if anybody does Simchat Beit HaShoeva, right, that's not Zeichel LeChor, but that's Zeichel LeMikdash. And there are there are other examples of this as well. And then he quotes a Midrash. And the only reason I'm quoting the Ran over here is because I can't find the Midrash. This is as far back as I can go to find somebody quoting this Midrash. But if I could have found this Midrash, I would have brought this to you. And the Midrash, you'll see, is either completely clear or problematic. Let's read. Uva Haggadah, and here is an Agadah, a legend, a teaching. Gamkin Amru, it's also said, Bishash Amala Moshe Ta'avdunat Elo Kim Allah Har Hazeh, from the time that Moshe said that you're going to serve God on this mountain, Amru Lo Yisrael, Moshe Rabbeinu, Emotai Avodazu, when are we going to have this? Amar Lehem, Lesov Chamishim Yom, at the end of 50 days. Vayu Monim Kol Achad Ve'achad La'atzmo, Mikan Kavu Chachamim L'Sfira Ta'omer. Because everybody counted then in Egypt, we already counted, towards getting to Har Sinai, and that's why the Chachamim instituted the counting, even, he's saying, that's why they made the counting even in the time that there was no Beit HaMikdash, to remember the counting that was done in leaving Egypt. Klomer bizman hazeh she'ein anu mevi'in korban velo omer ela mechashvim chamishim yom l'simchat ha-Torah kemo shemoni Yisrael ba'oto zman v'zeh vadei derech midrashu. And he goes, it's certainly just a midrash. And I'm sorry for putting the word just in that, but he's saying it's not, again, the Ran is writing a halachic analysis. His halachic analysis leads to the conclusion, why do we count Bizman Hazeh? Zecher LeMikdash. Why are we counting? To remember that it was once a Beit HaMikdash, and this is what they did in the Beit HaMikdash. He's saying, no, that nonetheless, there's a philosophical understanding that the Jews in Egypt counted. By the way, that's a big chidush. Where did I ever see that the Jews counted? But by the way, if it's you have to work a little bit with even the source that he brings. Because the verse that he quoted was which verse? Tadunat Kamazer. That's all the way back in Paragimel. That's far more than 50. From the day that that happened till they left was far more than 50 days. Unless you'll have to say that as they leave Egypt, they say to Moshe, "No, so when are we going to get there?" And Moshe already knew it was going to be 50 days, which again is very nice, but I don't know if we have any kind of evidence that Moshe knew it was going to be 50 days at that point. I mean, afterwards it ends up being 50 days. Did Moshe know that they were going to sin over here? Did Moshe know that Amalek was going to fight them over there? Was it always planned 50 days? But you realize how interesting this is, because to claim that 50 days was always part of it, that means, no, that's what it was supposed to be. By the way, there's another factor in this whole thing which throws everything off, and that is, don't we have a tradition that Moshe added one day by himself? Right? Moshe added one day, so what happened there to the counting and all? But by the way, Moshe's always handy. No, but the 50th day, there's a lot to talk about this. I think I've spoken about it. I've written about this. But there's a lot to talk about. Was Har Sinai, was Matan Torah on the 50th day or the 51st day that year? It's quite possible, if not probable, that Matan Torah itself was not on the 50th day. It was on the 51st day because Moshe added another day. And only the subsequent years we celebrate on the 50th day like works out in terms of the Omer. How does he conclude? One more second. Yeah. Yes. 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 The Ikra de Milta, but what's his bottom line after telling us this nice midrash that, as I said, I can't find any place other than the Ran? The Ikra de Milta, but what does that mean? Ha'ikar shel ha'davar, the bottom line is Zeich l'mikdash k'damar meimar. What's the real reason that we have the counting bizman hazeh? Like Amemar is an Amora in the Gemara. Like Amemar said, it's Zecher L'Mikdash. This is one of the things that we do to remember the Beit HaMikdash. But again, even within this halachic source, we find this dance taking place between these two different aspects of the Omer. Is it something which is purely agricultural connected to Beit HaMikdash, or is it somehow connected to the narrative of leaving Egypt? And you see the dual aspect put in over here. Yes. But the Ramban, correct, and the Ramban understands that the Torah level of the Omer is a happy day. Springtime, at least theoretically. Is it a happy time? Yes. Why? Well, the birds are chirping and the flowers are blooming and all of us are sneezing, right? So theoretically, it's a happy time. Spring is a happy time. And the Ramban says, not only is it happy, that's what's interesting, not only is it happy when you look outside and you look at the fauna and the flora. It's happy on a theological level, and that's what the Torah does, which means that the Torah takes the theology and marries it in to the agriculture in order to give us meaning in our lives and the times of the seasons as well. And that's why all the holidays are connected to agriculture as well. And as much as I'm sure that there are going to be people who are going to say, no, originally this was a pagan, whatever, holiday having to do with the rites of spring and so on and so forth. And then the rabbis came and put theology into it. You see in the Torah that the very leaving of Egypt is connected to the spring, right? Right. What does it say about Pesach? B'chag ha'aviv. It has to be in the springtime. The leaving of Egypt is a spring holiday. It happened to be that the farmer, the spring was something very significant. So for the Ramban to come in to tell us that this was a happy day, of course it was a happy day. Of course, a happy time. Of course it was a happy time. It was a happy time historically. It was a happy time theologically. And it was a happy time agriculturally. Of course it's happy. So you're going to say, but look, Rabbi Akiva's students died, and I'm going to add in again. And there were the Crusades, and there were the pogroms, and the blood libels that always took place this time of year. To what extent do you think the people experienced the blood libels and the Crusades as being a galut type of weakness, the fact that we are not in our land and we don't have the Beit HaMikdash and we don't have the agriculture, we don't have land. We can't celebrate this. That means all of the sadness over here is connected to a non-natural existence. The natural existence is supposed to be a happy time. So I'm sorry if I ruined the sad time of the Omer for you, but it's supposed to be a happy time. Of course the Ramban is going to say it's a happy time. The Rav Avadia Yosef quotes this Ramban when he was asked something about the Omer. I mean, again, if you're in the Omer, maybe it's bad luck, you can't have a wedding. I mean, there's certain times you're allowed to have a wedding, and somebody asked him, can you? Sure, but it's the Omer, and it's sad. He goes, hold it a second, like, are we all crazy? Of course, it's a happy time. And he quotes this Ramban over here, saying that there's no sadness in the... There's certain laws of Avelut, but there's no real sadness, which is, I think he's going a little far on that, but I just want you to see how strongly he, in a tshuva, in a halachic tshuva, how strongly he embraced this Ramban. Yeah. A bar and bar mitzvah is allowed. I'm gonna say this in a general sense because we're not talking about Omer now or so on. People confuse the 3 weeks and the Omer, and they're not the same. People confuse general mourning with this. I gave a couple of classes in the last few weeks in Hebrew, but my Hebrew is very easy. And if you want, you can listen to music. And I did a lot of the background on this. And for example, listening to music, the poskim know, for the most part, that they can't find any reason why it's not allowed. When I say no reason, no Gemara ever said it, no Mishnah ever said it, no Braita ever said it, no Tosefta ever said it. It's not written in the Shulchan Aruch. It's not even written in the early commentaries to the Shulchan Aruch. You're not going to find any prohibition to music till fairly recently. So they said, where did it come from? Why is there... Yeah, they made it up. One second. Were they the first to say this? No. Are they? If good, I know. I understand. I, by the way, whenever I give classes like this, I always look on the internet to see what are people saying. If you were to ask me, I don't understand any prohibition to music. You want to be strict? You can say music which will make you dance. Because again, what did it actually say in the original thing? Originally, it says that you can't have weddings, right? Then you can't have weddings during the time of the Omer. Right, that's the custom at the wedding. And then by the Shulchan Aruch time, it already adds in you can't have haircuts either. By the way, shaving is a whole other question. Is shaving included in haircuts, or are they fundamentally different? So don't answer that. Then you find, by the time of the Mugin of Ram, I mean, now we've moved already to the 17th century, he said, oh, and therefore you shouldn't have dancing as well. So dancing is if I say, okay, so I can't have a wedding. What part of the wedding is really problematic? So it's the simcha, it's the dancing. So then afterwards, then you have somebody, now you're getting closer to 19th century, saying, oh, if I can't have dancing, then I can't have music. But hold it a second. There's lots of music which is not dancing music. Here, I'll give you a heter. Anybody can listen to Leonard Cohen as much as you want. Right? You can't say that any of his music... No, I want to be easier. Say, who could say... No, classical concert, I agree. Where did somebody get this from? It's not allowed. So, are the poskim will say it's not allowed? Sure. By the way, Rav Moshe and Rav Avadya, when they say it's not allowed, do you know what they're reasoning that it's not allowed? They say, really, music's not allowed all year. And we'll make a all year, so we'll be machmer on Sfiras Omer. Because they couldn't figure out why there's a specific prohibition during the Omer. So as I said, you can listen to my Hebrew shir on this. I give all the background on it. If anybody wants to listen to music, I am inclined to allow certainly non-dancing music. Now, non-dancing music, which is not live, right, which is recorded, that again. And in our lives, music has basically become a noise in the background of our existence, which means it could be that live dancing music 300 years ago meant that there was this major celebration taking place. I could imagine somebody getting to an elevator and there's something there in the background covering their ears because, God forbid, they'll listen to music of the Omer. There is no problem with background music. There's no problem with music when you're driving. There's no problem with music when you're cleaning up or washing the dishes or cooking or doing whatever else that you do. Certainly no problem with background music. If you're going to ask me honestly, do I think that there's a problem with general music? I don't think there's a problem with general music. Live music, which is happy music, that's where I'll be more inclined to draw the line, which if you want to hear me say clearly, I think to go to the Philharmonic over the Sphere is perfect. I think it's perfectly fine to go to the Philharmonic. I never saw anybody by a Philharmonic concert get up and start dancing in the aisles. I've never seen it happen. Let's finish up over here. In 16 we have over here an interesting passage in the Zohar, which I've been looking for years. I didn't know it was here, which is why I've been looking for it. There's some kind of teaching that the Jews reached the 49th level of Tumah in Egypt. And I've been looking. Where's the first place that there's reference to it? So this is it. This is the Zohar Chadash in Yitro, at least in my edition. It's page Nun Bet. For some reason, every source I've seen who quoted always says it's on Daf Lamed Tet, and apparently it's not on Lamed Tet, because I see it in front of me right here in Daf Nun Tet. Certainly, they were worshiping other gods, and certainly when they were in Egypt, they became tamei. Astabue means tum'ah. V'itnafu, they got dirty. Gormeim b'chol zinim esabu, from all types of tum'ah. Adahavu sharu tachat arba'im v'teisha chili demist aba'uta. Till it was clear that in Egypt they got to the bottom of 49 levels of tum'ah. So here is where this is written. Therefore, the Zohar doesn't go to the next stage and say, and therefore we count 49 days of Kedusha, but I think that that's implied over here. The one who actually, I don't know if it's the first one to do it, because I said, once it's a source which is as old as Zohar, the Arizal then speaks about counting 49 days to getting to Kedusha. If you want to see somebody say it in black and white, source 18 is my trusty Kehilat Yaakov. Everyone should have one at home. The Kehilat Yaakov is an encyclopedia of Kabbalistic ideas. So anytime you're looking for a Kabbalistic idea, you can look in the Kehilat Yaakov. V'alkein Yisrael shenichnasu l'mem ted sharei tumah b'mitzrayim nigalu v'alkein l'echlu l'tmameya she'ilu hoyu nichnasim l'shar chamishim lo ya efshar latzeit. They couldn't wait even 1 second longer. But then, as I said, the Arizal then finishes this up. If you look at source 19, Sefer Kitzer HaKavanot, Shavuot, Sefer Kavanot was Rav Chaim Vital, based upon the teachings of the Arizal. V'zeh kivun shesafru memtet yimeya omer li taher mi memtet sha'are tumah. The reason we count 49 days is to fix the 49 levels of tumah, which is wonderful, because now I've given you a whole theological explanation of counting the 49 days because of the 49 levels of tumah in order to get to Matan Torah, which is all great, except for one thing. The Chumash itself said nothing about this. What did the Chumash say we count between what and what? No, the Chumash says we count between the bringing of the Omer for 7 weeks. So, we basically have over here two possibly independent stories. We have our agricultural story, which is Machar HaShabbat, which we're now, I hope, are all pretty convinced that really means Chag HaMatzot. Mimachar HaShabbat, bringing the Omer, 49 days, to this holiday Shavuot. Or we have leaving Egypt, where we sunk to the 49th level of Tumah, as we see from the Zohar. The Arizal spells it out. Now we need 49 days of fixing it in order to be able to stand on Har Sinai. We have a holiday which we see from the very first dialogue between God and Moshe. We're saying, it's about Har Sinai. I want you to go to Har Sinai. The location is mentioned in the very beginning. Again, you can't miss that. That's the sign, which means the location is the objective. What we just don't see over here is the whole counting of the 49 days. So we have to say, okay, this is just a coincidence that there are these two holidays, as the Ramban insists, and there's Kol HaMoed in between, that these are obviously connected, which means the Ramban would tell you, even if the counting doesn't connect them, they're connected. You can't separate them. This was what one was about. And the whole narrative of Egypt was we have to go serve God in the desert. What was serving God in the desert was about Matan Torah. So that's the whole thing. How can you separate these two? It's one story. So basically we have a question. Do we really have two separate stories or are they one story? So where do we see the two stories linked? The agricultural and the theological. The accepting of the Torah and the whole story of the agriculture. Well, this should be a very easy guess because there's only one source left. in Sefer Rut, the background of the... First of all, what is the story about? The story is about, on the one hand, is the whole genealogy of David HaMelech, which is only mentioned at the very end of the story. David was born, David died on Chag Shavuot. Maybe that's why we read on Shavuot. But what's it really about? It's about accepting the Torah. That's really what the story is about. It's about accepting the Torah. And all of Am Yisrael went through a conversion process at Sinai and became Jewish. They accepted the Torah. What does Ruth do over here? She goes through a conversion process and she accepts the Torah. That's what the book is about. But Tamar Ruth, al tifkei bi la'azvech, l'shuv me'acharayach, Ki el asher tilchi eleich v'asher tilini alin amech ami v'lohayich elohai. V'asher tamuti amut v'shamei kaver kol yaseh Hashem li v'chol yosif ki amavit yafrid b'nei v'neich. This is a story of accepting of the Torah, of accepting a nation, of being part of a nation, which is basically the story of what Matan Torah is. The background of the story, if you look in Pasuk Kaf Bet here in the same chapter, Vatashav Naomi Virut Hamovia Kalata Ima Hashava Miste Moav Vehema Ba'u Beit Lechem Bitchilat Ktsir Seorim. What is that also known as? In the beginning of the Ktsir Seorim, that is the bringing of the Omer. The Ktsir, the Seorim, is the bringing of the Omer. Perek Bed, Vatidbak Benarot Boaz Laket Ad Kilot Ktsir HaSeorim UKtsir HaChitim. What is the end of that by the Ktsir HaChitim? That's the time of Shavuot. Vatesha Vitchamotah, then she went back, which means that the whole background of the story over here is the agriculture. Again, agriculture is at the background of the story. The demarcations of this is basically during the time of the Omer. Specifically, we're making reference to the Seorim, which is basically what the Omer is, and the whole essence of the story is one of accepting the Torah. So I'm saying, if you look at the book of Ruth, over here you have the two parts of Chag Shavuot merging together within one book. And now you realize why the book of Ruth is so appropriate to read on Chag Shavuot, because the two things which I could have imagined as being independent, Matan Torah on the one hand, or accepting the Torah on the one hand, and the idea of the agriculture on the other, are forged together into one narrative over here. So therefore, these two things which look like they're independent are right here in the book of Ruth, which that's why I think it's so appropriate to read it on Chag Shavuot. So anyway, what I try to do is to show how these things that perhaps one can claim are independent are actually fused together. Just because something has two sides to it does not make it schizophrenic. You can have two sides to something and have it merge together into creating one thing which is much larger. This time period has an agricultural side and it has a theological side. And the beauty of the Torah is the fusing together of these two sides. And as I said, that all comes together within this one book of Ruth, which, again, you just think about it, begins with a rejection of the land of Israel, rejection of the agriculture. There are difficult agricultural times in leaving the land of Israel, but the eventual salvation is coming back to the land, accepting of the Torah, and that is where eventually David HaMelech comes from, and the eventual redemption, which means this whole story really is the story of accepting the Torah, but accepting the Torah in the most profound way.